Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Isaiah chapter 39, which I will entitle Envoys from Babylon. We are still in the historical section of Isaiah, which separates his first volume of prophecies from his second. Where we are is a matter of debate. I'll discuss the timing in just a little bit. We'll start now in Isaiah 39, verses 1 through 2. At that time, Merodach-Baladan, now this is the king of the Babylonian province, a province of Assyria. He ruled from 722 to 710 his first time, and then he was deposed and came back and ruled in 703 to 702. So you see, he is ruling about the time of Hezekiah, who ruled from 716 to 687. At that time, Merodach-Baladan, son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent Hezekiah letters and a gift, because he had heard of his illness and recovery. Hezekiah received the envoys gladly and showed them what was in his storehouses, the silver, the gold, the spices, the fine oil, his entire armory, and everything found among his treasures. There was nothing in his palace or in all his kingdom that Hezekiah did not show them. Now, before we get started, we need to point out that 2 Kings 20, verses 12 through 19, has an exactly parallel account. It's almost word for word. Let's look now at this Babylonian king Merodach-Baladan. We need to look at what the meaning of his name was. First of all, his Assyrian name was Marduk-Apla-Adina II. Remember, he is in Babylon, which is now a province of Assyria. His Assyrian name means Marduk has given me an heir. This is according to Wikipedia. Now, his Jewish name, or the way the Jews transliterated it, was Merodach-Baladan. Merodach is Marduk, the chief Babylonian god, and Baladan means Bel is Lord. So Marduk, i.e. Bel, is Lord. Bel means Lord of Master in the Assyrian language, and the name Bel is especially used to stand for Marduk in Assyrian and Neo-Babylonian names, as Wikipedia says. So basically, this is your Assyrian pagan here who has sent Hezekiah letters and a gift. Now let's look at the history of Merodach-Baladan. First of all, Sargon II, the king of Assyria, drove Merodach-Baladan from Babylon about 710 B.C. Merodach-Baladan had started ruling in 722 B.C. Well, Merodach-Baladan, about 7 years later, recaptures Babylonia from a Babylonian nobleman and rules for 9 months between 703 and 702. Sennacherib beat Merodach-Baladan in 702. Merodach-Baladan fled to Elam, crossed the Tigris River in the southwestern corner of Persia, present-day Persia, Iran, and Merodach-Baladan died in exile in Elam 2 years later. Now, verse 1 says that Merodach-Baladan came to see Hezekiah because Merodach-Baladan had heard of Hezekiah's illness and Hezekiah's recovery from that illness. Now, there are probably three reasons why Merodach-Baladan sent envoys to Hezekiah. The first is, which is stated here in verse 1, to hear about Hezekiah's miraculous recovery. Now, there's a problem with chronology here. Merodach-Baladan was beaten by Sennacherib in 702, according to Wikipedia, and Sennacherib attacks Hezekiah in 701. So, if Hezekiah's miraculous recovery happened before Sennacherib came, it could have happened during the latter years of Merodach-Baladan's second reign, and that's not a problem. The old commentators debated whether the healing was before Sennacherib's invasion in 701 or whether it was after that invasion in 701. It could be, just the dates are imprecise. So I'm still going to hold in my mind indecision about when this healing took place, before or after that invasion, and indecision about exactly when it was that Merodach-Baladan came over. But we do know that Merodach-Baladan came to see Hezekiah because Merodach-Baladan had heard of Hezekiah's illness and Hezekiah's recovery. It says so in verse 1. Well, that's the first reason why he came over. Second reason was to court Hezekiah. Both Merodach-Baladan and Hezekiah were opposed to Assyria, so it's only natural that they would be allies against the big bad Assyrian Empire. The third reason why Merodach-Baladan may have come to see Hezekiah is because Merodach-Baladan wanted to hear about the sun's miraculous recession on Ahaz's sundial, or Ahaz's steps, depending on how you want to translate that. could be all three. He wanted to hear about the recovery, wanted to hear about the recession of the sun on the sundial. He wanted to make an alliance with Hezekiah. Now we read about these envoys coming to Jerusalem in 2 Chronicles 32:31. Even in the matter of the envoys of the rulers of Babylon who sent to him to inquire of the wonder that had happened in the land, God left him alone only to test him that he might know all that was in his heart. Now what is that wonder that caused the Babylonians to come to Jerusalem? Well, it's two options. The wonder could have been Hezekiah's recovery from his illness, or it could have been the recession of the sun on Ahaz's sundial or Ahaz's steps. But again, in Isaiah 39, verse 1, it was because of the illness and recovery that Merodach-Baladan came. Now, Merodach-Baladan might not have thought it was miraculous. He might have just been congratulating the king on his recovery from a disease because he wanted to make an alliance with Hezekiah. So we'll leave that open. We've explored all the possible reasons why Merodach-Baladan has shown up in Jerusalem. Now, in verse 2, Hezekiah shows Merodach-Baladan, actually the envoys of Merodach-Baladan, Hezekiah showed them everything that was in Hezekiah's storehouses. I mean, we're talking about silver, gold, spice, oil, his armory. A very, very dumb move, as we'll see. In fact, it was not just in his treasuries, in his storehouses, that Hezekiah found things to show to the envoys, but also in his palace, his personal living place, and all his kingdom. It says, who needs an intelligence service? Who needs spies when you got Hezekiah just showing everything to Merodach-Baladan? Now, Hezekiah didn't do this because he was covetous. In fact, nowhere do we see that Hezekiah was covetous of riches. He had a lot of money, but he wasn't lusting for them. His sin here was vainglory. He was proud. Ah, the Babylonians are coming to seek an alliance with me. We go down to Isaiah 39, verses 3 through 8, and we will finish this short chapter. Then Isaiah the prophet went to King Hezekiah and asked, what did those men say, and where did they come from? From a distant land, Hezekiah replied, they came to me from Babylon. The prophet asked, what did they see in your palace? Now, Isaiah sounds like he knows what's happened. He's just probing Hezekiah for some damning admissions. The prophet asked, Isaiah asked, what did they see in your palace? They saw everything in my palace, Hezekiah said. There is nothing among my treasures that I did not show them. Then Isaiah said to Hezekiah, hear the word of the Lord Almighty. The time will surely come when everything in your palace and all that your fathers have stored up until this day will be carried off to Babylon. Nothing will be left, says the Lord. And some of your descendants, your own flesh and blood, who will be born to you, will be taken away, and they will become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. We'll see here in just a minute. Isaiah's words exactly came to pass a little over a century later. Verse 8, Isaiah continues the word of the Lord. In verse 8, Hezekiah responds to Isaiah, the word of the Lord you have spoken is good. Hezekiah replied, for he thought there will be peace and security in my lifetime. Now in verse 3, Isaiah the prophet went to King Hezekiah. He was sent by the Lord, as John Gill points out. This was not a chance encounter. What did those men say? Isaiah asked. Where did they come from? It wasn't that Isaiah was ignorant. He wanted to lead Hezekiah into further conversation. They came from a distant land. Now, this is what caused Hezekiah's heart to become proud. These ambassadors came to him from a very distant country and from so famous and renowned a place as Babylon. It showed that Hezekiah's name was known in foreign parts. He was a player in the foreign policy of the ancient Near East. And so he's feeling pretty cocky, Hezekiah is. Isaiah says, well, what did they see, the envoys? And Hezekiah said, nothing that they didn't see. I showed them everything. Isaiah is about to blast Hezekiah, and apparently Hezekiah didn't have a clue that Isaiah was about to do it, because Hezekiah very quickly and openly told Isaiah what he had done. So Isaiah prophesies in verse 6 that the time will come when everything is going to be carried off to Babylon. Now, we can read that in 2 Chronicles 36:6. Now Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, attacked him. That's referring to Jehoiakim, the king of Judah who ruled from 608 to 597. So Nebuchadnezzar bound Jehoiakim in bronze shackles to take him to Babylon. Actually, Jehoiakim died during the siege, and his son Jehoiachin was taken, and his son Jehoiachin was taken to Babylon instead of his predecessor Jehoiakim. So we read about Jehoiachin being taken to Babylon in 2 Kings 24, verses 12 through 13. Jehoiachin, who ruled only for 3 months in 597, king of Judah, along with his mother, his servants, his commanders, and his officials, surrendered to the king of Babylon. So the king of Babylon took him captive in the 8th year of his reign. He also carried off from there all the treasures of the Lord's temple and the treasures of the king's palace. And he cut into pieces all the gold articles that Solomon, king of Israel, had made for the Lord's sanctuary, just as God had predicted. I'm assuming that prediction is what Isaiah said here. He says in Isaiah 39, verse 6, all that your fathers have stored up will be carried off to Babylon. That happened in 597 when Jehoiachin was carried off to Babylon, and all of Jehoiachin's treasures, the treasures of the Lord's temple and the treasures of the king's palace, all taken back to Babylon. In verse 7, Isaiah says, some of your descendants, your own flesh and blood, who will be born to you, will be taken away, and they will become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Well, when did that happen? Well, let's look at Hezekiah's descendants in chronological order and see which of them might have this prophecy properly applied to them. We'll start off with Manasseh. That's Hezekiah's immediate son. He ruled from 687 to 642. He was at one time taken and carried to Babylon, but he was afterwards released, and it doesn't appear that he was made a eunuch or an officer there. And verse 7 says that some of your descendants will become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Manasseh probably never was, so this might not fulfill the prophecy. We read about Manasseh's trip to Babylon in 2 Chronicles 33, verses 10 through 13. The Lord spoke to Manasseh and his people, but they paid no attention. Therefore the Lord brought the commanders of the army of the king of Assyria against them, and they captured Manasseh with hooks, bound them with bronze chains, and took him to Babylon. Remember, Babylon is a province of Assyria. Babylon was not an empire yet. Manasseh was long before that. Babylon basically became an empire in 605 at the Battle of Carchemish, and Manasseh is between 687 and 642, about a half a century earlier. But Babylon is a province of Assyria. So Manasseh was taken to Babylon. When he was in distress, he entreated the Lord his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers. Ah, some foxhole religion. When Manasseh prayed to Yahweh, God was moved by his entreaty and heard his supplication and brought him again to Jerusalem to his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. So it's probably not Manasseh that Isaiah is talking about, because he wasn't made a eunuch. He was just a prisoner. However, when we get to 605 BC, when Nebuchadnezzar took over the reign of the Babylonian Empire after the Battle of Carchemish, when he defeated Pharaoh Necho II, while Nebuchadnezzar was in the area, Carchemish was on the Euphrates River, he says, okay, well, we're going to take some of the nobles of the kingdom of Judah, and we're going to take them back to Babylon. And that's when Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego all were taken into exile, 605 BC. Shadrach is his Assyrian name, Hananiah his Jewish name, Meshach is his Assyrian name, Mishael is his Hebrew name, Abednego is his Assyrian name, and Azariah is his Hebrew name. But we know him as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego because of the Sunday school songs we used to sing and the stories we used to listen to. Now, they did become eunuchs in the kingdom of Babylon, and so they fulfill this prophecy perfectly. So Hezekiah prophesied sometime around the end of the 8th century, end of the 700s, and this is 605, so that's 100 years later, his prophecy came to pass. Now, Isaiah prophesied in chapter 39 in verse 7 that some of Hezekiah's descendants would be taken to Babylon and become eunuchs. Now, some people will debate whether Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego became eunuchs. We do know they became palace officials. Well, it doesn't really matter if they became literal eunuchs or not, because court officials could probably be called eunuchs even though they weren't actually eunuchs, because eunuchs were often court officials, and so the name might have become a little fuzzy as time went on, so I'm not going to worry about that. We do know that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were of the tribe of Judah, and thus they were descendants of Hezekiah. We read in Daniel 1:6, among them from the descendants of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, the Hebrew names for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they were from Judah. They were descendants of Hezekiah. They became Babylonian officials / eunuchs. There's your fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy, not Manasseh. Now, there's another possibility. Jehoiachin was carried off to Babylon after ruling in Judah for only 3 months in 597 B.C., and also Zedekiah was carried off to Babylon in 586 B.C. when the kingdom finally went down. But those two kings, they were of the tribe of Judah, and they were descendants of Hezekiah, but they weren't made Babylonian eunuchs. Well, let's look at that as a possible option. Jeconiah, who was also known as Jehoiachin, 597, he reigned 3 months and 10 days, beginning December the 9th, 598 B.C., and of course, he was carried into exile in 597, just 3 months later, at the first part of 597. In Wikipedia, we read about Jeconiah, or Jehoiachin. He succeeded Jehoiakim as king of Judah after raiders from surrounding lands invaded Jerusalem and killed his father. It is likely that the king of Babylon was behind this effort as a response to Jehoiakim's revolt starting sometime after 601 B.C. 601 is when Babylonia went down to Egypt, had a bad go of it, and Jehoiakim switched his alliance from Babylon to Egypt, and Nebuchadnezzar did not like that. And so he came in and got Jehoiakim bumped off, and Jehoiachin is now king. He lasts 3 months. 3 months and 10 days after Jeconiah, Jehoiachin became king. The armies of Nebuchadnezzar II seized Jerusalem with the intention to take high-class Judahite captives and assimilate them into Babylonian society. On March 15th or 16th in 597 BCE, Jeconiah, Jehoiachin, his entire household and 3,000 Jews were exiled to Babylon. So Jeconiah was exiled to Babylon, but there is no evidence that Jeconiah / Jehoiachin was made a eunuch. He was allowed to eat at the king's table and taken out of prison sometime in the middle of his long exile, but he was not made a eunuch. And then, of course, the last king of Judah, Zedekiah, was defeated in 586. We read this from Wikipedia. Zedekiah and his followers attempted to escape, making their way out of the city. This is after the Babylonians had burned it down, but were captured on the plains of Jericho and taken to Riblah, which is right north of Jerusalem. There Zedekiah saw his sons put to death. Then his eyes were put out, and he was loaded with chains and carried captive to Babylon, where he remained a prisoner until he died, not made a eunuch. So, I think the prophecy is fulfilled with Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. In verse 8, Hezekiah responds to Isaiah. He says, "The word of the Lord you have spoken is good." Hezekiah replied, "For Hezekiah thought, there will be peace and security in my lifetime." Now, let's take a look into Hezekiah's state of mind here. We have two options concerning that. Option number one, Hezekiah is saying that, yes, God, yes, Isaiah, it is just and fair that bad things will happen to my descendants. It will be just and fair that they will be carried off to Babylon and become eunuchs in Babylon. That's fair because I was proud and I showed all of my kingdom's goods to the envoys from Babylon. And since I care about my descendants, they are part of me, they're part of my family line, it makes sense that God visits the punishment on them, and therefore I receive punishment too because I care about what happens to my descendants. That's option number one. Option number two is Hezekiah is more selfish than that. He's saying, hey, it's good that the punishment doesn't affect me. I get to live and my descendants, I don't care about them. Whatever happens to them, I'm going to be in the grave. I don't care. Well, the commentators will debate that. I'll report it and let you decide. I'm not really sure what Hezekiah was thinking there, but we do know that Hezekiah immediately repented of his pride upon Isaiah's come-to-Jesus meeting with him. This is shown more clearly in Chronicles than it is in the book of Isaiah, 2 Chronicles 32, verses 25 through 26 and verse 31. However, because his heart was proud, Hezekiah didn't respond according to the benefit that had come to him. So there was wrath on him, Judah and Jerusalem. The benefit that had come unto him, of course, was getting healed and getting 15 more years of his life. Then Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So the Lord's wrath did not come on them during Hezekiah's lifetime. When the ambassadors of Babylon's rulers were sent to him to inquire about the miraculous sign that happened in the land, God left him to test him and discover what was in his heart. Well, God discovered that Hezekiah had a little bit of pride there, showed all of his worldly goods to Merodach Baladan. Look at me, look how rich I am. Really stupid, really proud. But Hezekiah repented of that, and he was, for whatever reason, happy that he was going to live for 15 years. He was either happy that there was just punishment on his descendants for his pride, or he was happy, not caring about his descendants, but happy that his punishment had been mitigated by the Lord. Now let's look one last time at this question of whether Hezekiah was selfish because he did not worry about his descendants. He was only concerned about himself. Hot dog, I'm going to live for 15 years. I don't care what happens to those who come after me. Now I'm going to give you two commentators that say that Hezekiah was not selfish. Here's Matthew Henry. The prospect respecting his family and nation must have given him many painful feelings. So Henry thinks that Hezekiah does care about his descendants. Here's Matthew Poole. Hezekiah speaks not as if he were careless and unconcerned for his posterity, but because it was a singular favor that this judgment did not immediately follow his sin, but was suspended for a longer time. In other words, Poole says, it's not that he didn't care about his descendants, he was just happy for himself now. Nothing was said about his descendants. Here's the pulpit commentary, putting words into Hezekiah's mouth. Ought I not to accept with thankfulness the immediate boon instead of troubling myself about a remote future? Well, pulpit commentary seems to think that Hezekiah didn't worry too much about his descendants. So actually, the pulpit commentator would be on the other side, that Hezekiah was a little bit selfish. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Isaiah chapter 39. We are now prepared in our next audio to go to Isaiah chapter 40, which I will call The Greatness of God. I hope you stay tuned for that chapter, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.